when they put her on my chest, I just remember feeling this like overwhelming feeling of love, of like, I love this baby so much. And I know that she came from me, but also like, I knew that she wasn't mine. And like, what a blessing and an angel she was to come at this time in my life to like help change me forever. And then I think that at that moment, all of my shame and guilt and everything like completely went away. And I remember thinking like, she's the most beautiful gift like at that time in my life that to ever receive. Like, she was perfect. She was complete perfection.
Before we dive in, just a quick favor. If you're enjoying what we're doing at Angels Among Us, please take a second to rate and review the show. And if something in today's episode touches your heart, please share it with a friend. Welcome to Angels Among Us, the podcast where we share real stories of angelic encounters. Each episode, you'll hear firsthand accounts of divine protection, guidance, and miraculous interventions that remind us we're never truly alone. Whether through a whisper of comfort, an unseen hand of protection, or an unmistakable presence, angels are closer than we think. Join us as we explore these powerful experiences of angels, both seen and unseen.
Hello, hello. This is Heidi on Brent and Michaela's podcast, Angels Among Us. Is that good?
Is that what I sound like? Yep, hello, hello. Time.
Hello, hello.
Okay, I'm going to do it for real.
Okay, that's too bad.
You do have to put that in there, though.
I'll put it in. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Angels Among Us. Brent and Michaela here, as always. And we are joined again by my sister, Heidi. Yep. Two-timer, she says.
I have so many angels.
Yeah.
I do. That's so...
Yeah, if you haven't listened to her first story, you don't need to before you listen to this one. Those, they're not related. They're two separate things. However, there is, I believe it was our sixth episode, Gary and Andrea. You don't necessarily need to listen to that one first, but you will want to listen to them, you know, back to back or whatever, because the story is related. But I don't think the order matters. What do you think?
Nope.
Yeah, doesn't matter. So if you haven't listened to Gary and Andrea's, go back and listen to that one either before or after listening to this. And then next week, we are going to have another episode that is also correlated to this one. So you'll want to listen to that one after this one.
Yeah.
It's a good thing that it's coming out next week. So
that's right.
We take care of our listeners. If I'm being honest, this is one of my favorite stories ever.
Mine too.
Because I'm in it a little bit. Oh my
God. Yeah, you are.
Oh, this
just
guy.
Kidding. Not so much. But yeah, this, it's just a beautiful story, and I'm excited for you all to hear it. I always love listening to Heidi tell it. She told me earlier that she's told this story 7,000 times.
That's what it feels like sometimes.
So this is 7,001.
Yep.
This will be the best one, though.
I gave away a prize the last one, though. That was the 7,000th one. Too bad. Oh. You weren't. It wasn't you. Just kidding. Just kidding. You missed it by one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I know Heidi better than any of our other guests that we've had on. And
so why don't you tell me about me?
I was just going to say I pretty much know everything about you, but since most of our listeners don't know much about you, you need to tell everybody something quirky about yourself.
Well, there's lots of quirky things about me, but well, one fun thing about me, I think, well, I don't know, I have a lot of weird things, but one, I can fall asleep anywhere. Like, actually, my very favorite place to fall asleep is, would be like in the middle of a park, where like there's so much noise around me. It's so soothing. I love falling asleep in like a public place. I can do it on an airplane, anywhere. Also, if I watch a movie, how I know it's a really good movie is if I haven't fallen asleep. There's only a few of those. I fall asleep in almost every movie there is.
Are we even related?
I know,
I
because you're so
Because
opposite.
I have the hardest time falling asleep anywhere other than my bed. And
Well,
I've gotten okay at falling asleep on my recliner downstairs.
this is my special power. So I hope that never goes away. I'm afraid that perimenopause is going to take that away from me. I'm just holding out. I'm waiting for it to happen.
Yeah, that really is a superpower.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it truly is.
Yeah, Michaela's
I
kind of
have
like
it.
that.
I have it too.
Yep.
And I found out that Alex has that too. Spoiler alert, we're gonna
I
talk about
know.
her.
You'll soon find out who Alex is for the listeners that don't know you.
Yep.
Okay,
All
well,
right.
go ahead and tell everybody about Alex.
Should I tell them a little more about me or two or no?
Tell them about you
Well,
because they
yes, of
might be
course.
listening to
Yes.
this one
No,
first.
yeah, lead
Yes.
into the whole thing.
Go into your family, how awesome your
Okay.
parents are.
Yeah. Well, okay, I'll tell you about me real quick now and then we'll back up almost 24
Sure.
years. Okay. So I'm a mom. I have four kids at home that I'm raising. Well, one is at BYU. Go Cougars. She's going to BYU. And she's a freshman, and then I have three boys. She left me with all of these boys at home. So
And they're all
she,
so awesome.
they're so awesome and they're so fun. And they're 17, 15, and almost 13. So they're crazy. Anyways, and then I'm married. I've been married for almost 21 years, be 21 in April, and it's been super fun.
And he's the best. Oh my
Yeah,
gosh.
he's pretty great. And
Yes.
yeah, he's great. We live in St. Louis. We used to live in Washington State, and now we live in St. Louis. We've been here for 4 years. So we love it
Wow.
here. Yeah. Anyways, so I'll back up 24 years or so. So a lot of you know that I'm the oldest of seven. At the time, it was the oldest of six. Brent's right underneath me, 2 years. And then we have a couple sisters and a couple brothers. And at the time it was six because later our mom had another baby, our sweet little surprise.
That helped with that a little
Yeah,
bit.
oh, I'm sorry. You're right. You're right.
Our miracle
Anyways,
baby.
we, yeah, she is. Anyways, we grew up obviously like very conservative, very going to church and everything. And so and it was very like we don't date until we're 16. And so then when I got a boyfriend at 16 because then I could. All the other times it was just illegal, and this time all of a sudden it was like okay. But so I had a boyfriend in high school, and
I never broke the rules, by the way.
Oh my
I'm
gosh.
sure you didn't. I know, because in my
So.
journal, oh, this is a fun, quirky fact. I have written in my journal, I'm the bad Wyatt. Brent is the good Wyatt.
So
Old
funny.
were you when you wrote that?
Maybe 12,
I have
11.
never known that.
Well, there you go. There's another fun
A
fact.
new fun
Anyways,
fact.
Brent walked right into that one.
Oh my gosh, that's so
Anyways,
funny.
so I think that was like my junior year. Well, maybe sophomore, junior. I don't know. Anyways, I had a boyfriend. We were off and on all throughout kind of high school. It was kind of a big joke, like how toxic our relationship was and how off and on it was. And anyways, fast forward, I was right after my senior year of high school. I was working in a restaurant and I was starting to get really like sick randomly. And I even remember one of the servers at the restaurant even said, "You're not pregnant, are you?" And I was like, "No." But I still remember like thinking like, "Gosh, I don't know. Like maybe I am." But I was getting ready to go to BYU, Idaho. And so I was like not really obviously ready to have a baby, do any of that. Like obviously at the time I was really kind of like upset. Like it wasn't something that I kind of had on the plan for my life. And so I never like took a test or anything. I, at that time of my life, did a really good job of just like thinking like, oh, if I don't think about it, it will go away. Like a real smart 18-year-old. And so I never took a test, never went to a doctor, never did anything. And then I just kind of kept going on with my life. And I went to school at BYU Idaho in September. And I totally knew that I was pregnant. I just kept like hiding it. Like my roommates didn't know, nobody knew, and I just hid it. And for anybody that knows anything about Rexburg, Idaho, it gets really cold. And so in the winter, it was like kind of a perfect time. I was wearing big sweatshirts, jackets all the time. Like nobody knew that I was pregnant. And I didn't know how far along I was. Like I knew nothing other than I had seen my mom be pregnant, probably what I can remember at least three other times. And so I knew that like there's certain medications I couldn't take and that I needed to drink a lot of water. Like I remember thinking about this stuff and I was tired all the time. I didn't really have a whole lot of morning sickness. I was just like, would feel so tired all the time, but I kept like trying to just kind of like think like there's no way that I can be pregnant right now. And so right before, let me see, I would say in October, I went home for like a weekend to visit. And that's when I told my boyfriend at the time, I told him that I was pregnant. And he was kind of like, there's no way. How are you? What are we going to do? We're too young. And I'm like, I know. And I was just kind of trying to tell him, like, I've like heard about adoption. And, you know, he was like, yeah, we can't have a baby right now. And I was like, I know. And so everything I ever knew about adoption is what I saw in the movies, which was they take the baby from you the moment you have it and you will never be able to see it. And then you go on and live your life like it never happened kind of thing. And like that scared me, but I also felt really like, well, maybe that's the right option. Like I want to do what's best for her. And so maybe, or I didn't know what baby was at the time, but I was like, I want to do what's best for the baby. And like, and I remember thinking like, I can't provide her with the family that I want. I know that this relationship that I'm in will probably ultimately end in divorce. And ultimately like it wasn't the situation that I wanted to be in. And so I knew that it wouldn't have been the best environment for this baby. And what else is kind of crazy at that time, I was in an English class at BYU Idaho, and we had to write papers. I don't even know what the subject was. I don't remember anything about it other than one girl in our class talked about adoption and placing babies for adoption. And I remember raising my hand. Okay, remember, I'm pregnant. Nobody knows this. And I remember raising my hand and asking her, but do you think that people think that that's the easy way out? And she looked at me and she was like, no, it is the hardest thing that you will ever have to face. And I hope nobody has to like go through that. Like it's so painful and it is not the easy way out. And I remember just thinking like, that's interesting. Like I also thought it was interesting that I had the guts to ask that because I don't even know if this girl was a birth mom or if maybe she knew somebody that dealt with adoption or placing a baby for adoption. But I just remember so specifically that her paper and asking that question and her like looking at me straight in the face and being like, no, it's not easy. It's not the easy way out. And so I just kind of kept that with me. And then I went home for Christmas. Again, nobody knew still. And which is going to blow your minds when I tell you when this baby was born. And so I then go home or go back to school in January. And this is such a Heidi thing to do too. I was like, oh, I have to tell my parents right before tuition is due because I don't want them paying tuition and then not get to go to school. So I was like waiting till the very last second, which is sounds right. And so I remember it was the day before my 19th birthday, which is in January. And I went and finally talked to my bishop and I just was like, I'm pregnant. This is what's going on. And he was like, okay, well, I'm going to give you your birthday off and then we're going to have to call your parents. And I was like, thanks. Like, this birthday is going to not be fun. And I even remember like that day my mom sent a like a balloon bouquet with some treats or something. And then she got really mad at me that I didn't call her later that day because I inside I was feeling super guilty. Like I'm about to really upset my parents. And so I just remember thinking like, I don't even want to talk to my mom today. Like I just feel so guilty. And so then the next day I went back to my bishop's office and he had in there, he asked a lady to come from LDS Family Services. LDS Family Services isn't an adoption agency anymore, but at the time they were in 2002. And she talked to me kind of about my options. She's like, you can single parent, you can marry this guy, you can, do you know anything about adoption? And I was like, I only know what the movies say. And she was like, well, you could choose the couple that your baby goes to. And I was like, really? And she's like, yeah, you have a say in like where a baby goes and you could meet them. And it could kind of actually be like you're very much a part of the process. And I was like, I had no idea that it was even a thing. And so she assured me that that was a thing. And so I called my mom and I remember asking her, you know, in 2002, there were landlines, no cell phones. I mean, we had cell phones, but they weren't like they are now. And so I called on the landline and I said, hey, mom, I said, I have to tell you something. Can you make sure that dad's not anywhere near you? Because at that time, my dad and I fought a lot when I was a teenager. And so I was like, if anybody's going to be so mad at me, it's going to be my dad. And so I just asked my mom to go in another room. I told her basically like kind of tried to spit out that I was pregnant. And I could just like hear her heartbreak on the phone. Like, I can't explain it, but I could just like hear her like just be really sad and like upset. And then like the phone clicked out, like somehow we lost connection. And I was remember thinking like she hung up on me, like she's so mad she hung up on me. And I don't even I think maybe a few minutes later like I called back or she called me. I actually have blanked that part out. But the thing that I do remember is later on that night my dad called our apartment and somebody was like, hey Heidi, your dad's on the phone for you. So I get the phone and my dad said, Heidi, like we're feeling sad, disappointed, upset, like all of the things that you could feel. And then he paused and he was like, but most of all, like we want you to know that we love you. And I remember that kind of just like blowing me away of being like, wow, my parents still love me, even though I felt at that time very unlovable. Like I felt like it was something like I totally betrayed my parents' trust. And I really felt like a lot of shame around that. And so when he told me that, like, I was like, oh, I think we're going to be okay. Like they still want to have something to do with me. Like they still want to be in my life. And they ended up coming to get me that weekend because I had to go home, obviously, like, and have a baby. And again, I still had no idea like how far along I was. I didn't know if it was a boy or a girl. And my parents came and got me, and that was really hard to be able to see him face to face. But still, I just remember thinking like kind of blown away at this overwhelming amount of love that they showed me. Because like I said, at that time, I didn't feel like I really deserved it, but they really embraced me and just said, we are going to support you, whatever you choose to do. Like it has to be 100% your choice. And I remember really appreciating that. And I don't think that I realized how important that would be later on, like to just know that them saying like, this is your choice. So we ended up going home and I had my first doctor's appointment. Oh, that's something else my dad was kind of mad at me about, that I hadn't gone to a doctor. And I was like, Dad, I know how to do this. Mom, I've seen Mom. He was like, but I remember him getting pretty upset with me and being like, you know, like, this isn't just about you. Like, this is about the baby that's inside of you and you haven't gone to see a doctor yet. Like, that's not okay. And I said, no, you're right. So I think probably a couple of days after I got home, I went to a doctor. We had our first ultrasound and the birth father and my mom were in the same room, awkward, having an ultrasound. And I remember the doctor telling us that I was 36 weeks along. And for those of you who don't know, like I didn't know as a 19-year-old, I was like, oh, what does that mean? Because my mom almost fainted, was almost on the ground, like fainting, like, oh my gosh. And the doctor was like, well, Heidi, that means that you could have a baby any day now. And I was like, oh, okay. And then for some reason, we never got the gender of the baby. It was like, then there were concerns because my amniotic fluid was really low. Anyways, and we figured out how big she was, or again, I didn't know what she was, but figured out just like how far along I was. And so then it kind of everything kind of went like into fast forward. And a lot of people will ask at this point, what do you mean, Heidi? How come people couldn't tell? And I think this is where I think like the body and the mind are so crazy. Because there was a lot of times I was like kind of denying that I was even pregnant. So I feel like my body wasn't even allowing myself to really grow. My amniotic fluid was pretty low. And I'm really tall. I'm 5'10". And so I've always said that my babies just like stand up in me. Like they don't go out, they just stand up. And so, but also what I think is kind of crazy is after I told mom and dad and the family and everything, I feel like super quick after that, I popped out. Like then people could obviously tell, which was crazy to me. And so things kind of had to fast forward, and we knew a family in our ward at the time that had gone through this like 4 years before. And they talked about how they had a caseworker in Utah and how the like support system there in Utah was really big because they would have like group like counseling sessions with other girls who were pregnant and had either placed a baby for adoption or who had single parented. And like it's just a really good community for all of these girls to like get together and kind of support each other. And I kind of really felt like that was what I was supposed to do. We lived in a really small town. I kind of needed for my own self needed to get away from people to be able to think clearly because when people find out that you're pregnant and you're 19, all of a sudden, like everybody has opinions about what you should do. Like I had aunts and uncles, like Brent and I are half Mexican. And I had aunts who were Mexican who were like, we don't do this. Like Mexicans take care of each other. Like we don't get rid of our own blood. And then I had another aunt and uncle on my dad's side who said that they would adopt her. And I was like, no, like I don't want her to go to a family member that's like super close. Like they lived in the same city. Like I wasn't willing to do that either. And I just remember like being so overwhelmed with everybody's opinions about what I should do that one time, I don't know if it was another family member who felt like they needed to come and talk to me, but I remember my dad pulling me in the kitchen and being like, Heidi, you still have to make your own decision. Like people are going to come at you with all their opinions. And he's like, you can just be kind and listen, but there can also be a time where you say that's enough. Like, I don't want to hear from anybody else. And I remember feeling that that was just so wise to me to just be like, be kind, but also like have boundaries kind of is what he was trying to teach me. And I remember like thinking, I think adoption is the right choice for me. Like, I think that's what we're supposed to do. And I went over and talked to this family with the girl that she had placed a baby 4 years before me. And I remember talking to her and we talked about their whole story. And I just remember overwhelmingly feeling like the spirit tell me, like, this is what you're supposed to do. Like, as hard as it's going to be, you need to place this baby. She or this baby needs to go somewhere else. And when I got that confirmation, I was like, that's what I'm supposed to do. Like, I don't know who she's going to go to. I don't know anything, but that's what I feel is the right thing to do. And so at that point, we started meeting with a caseworker that lived in a town 3 hours from where we were. And she would come over and bring us files. Like, so many things are done online now. But at the time, she would like bring over pieces of paper of like letters that adoptive parents had written to birth moms, and then with like pictures, like color copied pictures to like show what these families were. And they're, if I was in the state of Washington, so I was pretty much getting state of Washington couples. And I remember like looking through a few of them and just being like, these don't feel right. It doesn't feel right. And then I would feel super guilty because I was like, they just want a baby. And I don't know, but it also felt like really off. And also at this time I realized that I could choose like what kind of family she would go to. So like, I really wanted a family that was athletic, active, like outdoorsy and like did stuff like that. Cause that's what we grew up with. I also really, I don't know if selfishly is the right word, but I wanted her to be the oldest, this baby to be the oldest baby for their family. Like I wanted to give that gift to somebody that to help them start their family. And I don't know, like if there was a whole lot of other things that I had, like super, like strong things that I wanted for them. But I knew that when I would get a couple's file that I would read and it just didn't feel right, I would be like, this isn't them. And I would just give it back. Like, I just knew. It was kind of the craziest thing. And then shortly after that, I ended up moving to Utah and we found a family that had two adopted boys themselves and they had opened up their home to any potential birth mom that needed to be out there. And because I was 19 at the time, I wasn't a minor. So it didn't have to be like a foster home kind of situation. Like I could just go live with them. And so we went down to Utah. We met with them at LDS Family Services. I'm still pregnant. And I walk into this room and I see this couple and I just had an overwhelming feeling that like I had known them before. Like, and I knew that it wasn't on this earth. Like I knew logically that I had never met them before in my life. But I remember thinking like, these people are like my second family. They're going to be somebody really special to me. And so I met them and they loved me from the second that they met me, like open arms. And I remember thinking at that time, like, again, feeling still so much like shame and guilt that having them embrace me for exactly who I was and where I was at that point in my life, I just remember feeling like almost like an extension of this is how my Heavenly Father feels about me. And I just felt their love. So we met them. And then I think the next day, I met them, moved in with them. My parents were with me for a few days. Pretty soon after that, I had to go to the doctor. And then I finally had my ultrasound. And they told me that it was a girl, which kind of shocked me because the whole time I was thinking, like, it's a boy. And then so they told me that she was a girl. And I remember having a doctor's appointment. And my doctor checked me. And he was like, oh, I think you still have a couple weeks. I was like, okay. And because my amniotic fluid was low, I had to spend a lot of time on my left side and I had to drink like so much water. It was ridiculous. But I was like, it's like almost bed rest, but not really, because I was still able to get up and move around, but I had to be down on my side as much as possible. Shortly after that, like my parents left, went back to Washington because I still had a bunch of siblings that lived at home and they had to go back and take care of them. And this is where a lot of people think that like my parents forced me to move to Utah. But again, that was 100% my choice. Like I wanted to be there. I felt like that's where I was supposed to be. And so I, as a mom now of somebody who is 19 years old, like that'd be really hard to have to leave. So I think a lot of times, like, I don't think I realized it at the moment, but like how much faith and trust my parents had to have in somebody else to kind of take care of me at that time. And to know that I would be okay. And I'm really grateful for that because I know that that's where I was supposed to be. And I can only imagine how hard that was for them. So I kind of got integrated with this really cute family, these two boys that I completely fell in love with. That kind of became like my younger brothers. And
how old were they at the time?
I think they were 10 and 8 or 11 and 9. That's how old they were. They were younger, but
you can shout out their names if you want.
Yeah. These guys who are like my angels are Charm and Susan Smith. They are like my second parents. And then their boys, Tyson and Jake, who I just love. They're adopted and they couldn't be more different. which was so fun for me to see this like side of adoption that was like, they had these parents that loved them just like as if they came from them. And I loved seeing that. I loved that every Saturday was like dad's day. So Sharm would always take the boys and go do something fun with them. And I was like, this is what I would want my child to have, is like a mom and a dad who love them unconditionally and take them out and like wanted like just do things with them. So I was with them for a couple weeks, and I actually think it was probably only like 2 weeks or so. I originally had a due date for February 21st. And then I went into the doctor and he checked me. Oh no. At this time, I had had looked at a couple profiles. Like I had seen my counselor, my caseworker. She was actually just about to like retire and be done because she had kids and she kind of wanted to stay at home. And then she agreed to take me on as her last like person, like her last client. And I really loved her too. And I felt really special that she was willing to stay on for me, probably because I was due so soon. She was like, this is not going to be a 9-month situation. But so she'd given me some files to look at. And I remember the very first file that I looked at, I like really liked it and I felt good about it. But I was also like, this is the biggest decision of my life. Like I would really love if the Lord could shine down a light onto this piece of paper and it could be glowing and have glitter to tell me that this is the right one. But I didn't, I just like felt good about it. But so I was like, I don't know, like I'll hold on to this, but I'm going to keep reading other ones. And so I would read other ones, give them back, read other ones, give them back. But I just had this one that I was kind of holding onto, and I really loved it because it was written in a Goldilocks and the Three Bears like story. And so this little girl went into Goldilocks, like Goldilocks went into the Three Bears house, and they could see, she could see like, this is what this couple is. And then she'd go into the garage and she would see like ski equipment and camping equipment. And then she'd go into some other place and then she would see dance like stuff. And so it was really cool how they took like Goldilocks to go through their house to kind of tell their story. And I loved that. I was like, that's so different. It's like, they're not really selling me on them, where I felt like a lot of times other people were trying to sell me on like picking them. And so I loved it. And I told my counselor, I was like, I'm going to hold on to this. And she said, okay, if you are holding on to that file, nobody else, no other birth moms can look at it. And I was like, okay. And she's like, so you're going to, as soon as you know, if it's not right, you need to give it back so that we can like put it back in the system. I was like, okay, I'm just going to hold on to it. I kind of feel good about them, but I'm not sure. Well, then a few days later, I went to a doctor. He checked me. He's like, if I was a betting man, you're not going into labor this weekend. I'll see you next week. I was like, okay, cool. That was probably February 9th on a Friday. And then February, maybe not. I probably have my days wrong. It's okay. But that was a Friday, my appointment. And then Saturday night, I remember like having contractions all night long. But I was like, it's too early. Like, there's no way I can have contractions yet. And I even remember like waking up, and they were maybe around 15 minutes apart or so. Like, not too bad. I remember waking up that next morning, we were getting ready for church, and I told Susan, and remember, she hasn't ever had a baby either. So she's like, I don't know. And she like goes and gets this, the book of like what to do when you're expecting or something, whatever that book is, it's like famous book. And we're like flipping through it. And she's like, well, I don't know, maybe it's Braxton Hicks. And I was like, I don't know either. And she was so cute. She was literally like, I don't know what you're going through. And, so I went to church, and I remember having contractions like through church and being like, oh gosh, but not really telling people like kind of how often they were coming. We get home from church. We're playing phase 10. I remember my parents called, like I was talking to my mom, and I'm like having contractions while I'm talking to my mom, but I didn't want to tell her because I didn't want to worry her or have her like try to come to Utah with nothing happening. If it was just fake, like labor pains, right? So later that night, they started to get closer and closer together, where I was like, I don't know. And so Susan calls the nurse, and the nurse says, take her on a walk or let her have a hot bath. If they start getting worse or closer together, then that means it's real labor and she needs to come in. And so I think I took a bath first because that sounded better than a walk. and nothing was getting better. And then I went on a walk, and they lived in this little neighborhood where, like, if you turn the corner, it was like up a hill. And so we went on a walk. This was probably like at 9 o'clock at night, and on February 10th. And so we go, and I walk, and I get halfway up this hill, and I was like doubled over. I was like, I am, these are for real. And they're like 3 or 4 minutes apart. Like, this is not, we got to go. So they took me to the hospital, and I remember thinking, like, I don't even have a family picked out yet. Like, I can't have a baby yet. I don't even know where she's gonna go. And so they check me in. They start saying that she's under stress. So they were kind of threatening C-section. And I remember getting really scared and being like, I didn't plan on a C-section. Like, what am I gonna do? And so they had me stay on my left side again. I remember just probably praying like a million times, like, please, like, help her heart regulate again. Like, I'm stressing out. I need her to be okay. And Susan was there with me the whole time, just like I remember her like stroking my hair and just holding my hand and being there with me. And I was on the phone with my mom and dad and telling them what was happening. And so I think pretty quickly they packed up and like started driving to get to Utah, which was about 12 hours from our house in Washington to go to Utah. And they probably drove the fastest and most worried that they've probably ever were. And you guys, Brent and my two sisters got to come with. Do you remember that part, Brent? Did they like wake you up?
Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah. And I had just started getting a sore throat, and I knew that it was strep.
I let you around my baby with strep
No,
throat.
I had to wait a little while
Or
because
you, oh, maybe that's right.
we got there. The
Yeah.
very first thing we did when we got, well, I dropped mom off anyway. I went into a clinic. Sure enough, it was strep,
Oh.
and I got some antibiotic. So I was on antibiotic for 24 hours before I saw
Okay.
anybody.
Then we're
But
okay.
that trip, that 12 hours was miserable. My throat was killing me.
Oh.
I was mad at my sister, and I'm just kidding. No,
No,
but
you guys
I
probably
wasn't
were.
gonna miss it. They told me I could stay home if I wanted to, and I said no, I need to go.
Yeah. So fast forward, like, her heart started to regulate, and I knew my parents were coming. Birth father was also on his way. His parents helped him get a flight out to Salt Lake, and so he was on his way. And then they finally got me back into a room, I'm guessing around midnight or so, maybe a little bit before then. And I finally got an epidural. And I just remember thinking, like, thank goodness for this epidural. Like, this, because I was able to kind of relax and try and, like, I didn't feel any more pain. I was so excited about this epidural. And they told me to sleep a little bit if I could. I actually had that family that was from Washington. They were in town because they were, I didn't even, oh, maybe our friend was getting ready to go on his mission. That would make sense. And so they came to see me in the hospital like around midnight after when I had an epidural, which was actually a really cool experience because me and this friend, like, we grew up together. And so it was really cool that they came to see me at midnight. I mean, it's just crazy that they did that for me, but they came to see and kind of like wish me luck. And then I ended up like around 3 a.m. I was like, something's going on with my body. I started shaking, all the things. They come in and check me, and they said that she was ready to come. And so I pushed for 30 minutes, and she was born at 3:38 in the morning. And I remember at the like when I was pregnant with her, thinking like I didn't want to be attached to her. I didn't want to like feel like, because I was afraid that it was going to be really hard, even though I knew that that was the right thing to do. And when they put her on my chest, I just remember feeling this like overwhelming feeling of love, of like, I love this baby so much. And I know that she came from me, but also like I knew that she wasn't mine. And like what a blessing and an angel she was to come at this time in my life to like help change me forever. And then I think that at that moment, all of my shame and guilt and everything like completely went away. And I remember thinking like, she's the most beautiful gift that like at that time in my life that to ever receive. Like she was perfect. She was complete perfection. And she was tiny. And I just instantly like was overwhelmed by how much love I had for her. And then I think I went to sleep. Again, Susan was there with me the whole time. My mom and dad hadn't made it there yet. I think my mom and dad got there maybe around noon the next day. And I think also at the same time, like I remember my mom, like kind of watching my mom's heart completely soften when she saw this baby and how perfect she was and just completely fell in love with that, with her. Both my parents were pretty emotional during that time. And the crazy thing is I still didn't have a family picked out. I'm still like, I don't know what we're doing. But the nursing staff was like amazing. Nurses and doctors were like, you just take as long as you need. Cause normally like they want moms turned around in 24 hours. If you haven't had a C-section, they're like, you want to leave. And I remember with me, them just being so patient and saying, you can have as much time as you want, however many days you need to be here with her until you work, whatever you need to work out. Like that's all going to be okay. I was like, okay, that's super nice. And so I showed my mom and dad like this file of this couple and they read it. And my mom was like, yeah, they sound great. And I was like, okay, like, what do we do? Like, do we just tell them? And so mom and Susan went and got like a cute little outfit. I still hadn't named the baby because I kept thinking like, that is something that I want them to do as the couple. I want them to name their baby. And so mom and dad went, or mom and Susan went and got like an outfit. They went and got like a little pink card and to give to Alex's parents. And so they did. I think they told that story, how they walked in and saw this pink envelope and found out that I had chosen them. And then fast forward, we planned to meet the next day. And I still was like kind of unsure. Like, I don't know if this is them. I'm just making a decision and I'm going to go with it because I feel good. And that next day that we met on the 12th, I walked into the room with my parents and with the birth father because he was also there. Super supportive, by the way, of like everything. He was just really supportive and really understanding that this was what we needed to do. Didn't fight me on anything. So I'm really grateful for that. And I walked into the room and I met Alex's parents, Shannon and Andrea, for the first time. And I have never felt the spirit that strong in my life. It was like, you know how I like wanted like a visible like light shining with glitter? Like, I feel like that's what my spirit was doing. Like you couldn't see it, but I could feel it. I was like, this is them. Like these are her parents. These are who the Lord has chosen to be her mom and dad. And I could not deny it. Like that was like, it was crazy. And I actually really, I always say that that was Heavenly Father's little like tap to me to be like, see, you can make good choices. Like you can do this. Like you chose them. And I'm just helping reassure you that you made the right choice. And I have carried that with me forever. And then so we sat in there, talked probably for like 3 or 4 hours. Like we just got to know each other. They wanted to know all about me, all about our family and all about birth father. And like, it was kind of a really neat, it was just a neat day. And then we planned on doing it the next day, like doing the placement the next day. This was right in the middle of the 2002 Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City. And Andrea was like in a dance company that was performing somewhere. And so we had to push off placement to the next day. And I obviously wasn't that upset about it. I was like, oh, that's awesome. I get to spend another like 24 hours with the baby. And I think then is when they told us that they would like to name her Alexandria. They did ask me if I had a name for her. And I said, no, like, I want you guys to name her. And they said, well, what do you think about Alexandria? And I thought, when I was in elementary school, I kid you not, I thought the name Alex for a girl was so cool. I was like, she will be so cool. Like her dad just yelling at her, like on the basketball court, like Alex and stuff. Like, I just thought that was so cool. Also, spoiler alert, she turned out to be a dancer. So her athletics were used somewhere, just not on the basketball court. And she was a beautiful, amazing dancer growing up. And so then the next, that night, I remember the nurses coming in and saying, can we take her for you? And I was like, no, why would you take her? Like, I will sleep after she's gone, but I'm going to spend every single second that I could with her. We all wrote her letters. My siblings that were there, my mom and dad, me, we all wrote her letters that she could have when she was older. And I remember just being like, so hopeful of like, I hope and pray that someday she will want to know me. Like, that's all I ever wanted. And at that time, it was really, really hard to see like what the future was going to hold for us. And I just remember thinking like, please, if I could ask for anything, it would be that she would just want to know me someday and that I would get to meet her again. And I feel like at the time I had peace and comfort knowing that that would happen. It would just maybe take a little while. Because at that time, adoptions were semi-open, where like we knew their first names and I knew that they lived in Utah and they knew our first names and that we lived in Washington, but that was it. And all correspondents had to go through the agency for the first couple of years. That's just kind of how things were done back then. And so I knew that it wasn't going to be like really open from the beginning and that that would probably be really hard. So then we got ready for the next day to come. And I remember hearing maybe around 10, 30, 11 that they were there at the hospital and we were going to go meet in like this conference room. And they just, the nurse came in and said, Shannon and Andrea are here, but they said that you can take all the time that you need with her. And I said, okay. And I gave her a bath with my dad. Like we gave her like a little sponge bath and we got her dressed up in this cute little outfit so that she could go meet her parents for the first time. And I really thought on the 7,000th and one, I wouldn't cry. When it was time, when I was like, okay, I'm ready. I had her in my arms and I walked down the hall to this conference room and my dad was right there with me. My mom was right there. Birth father was there. And I walked in that room and like right away, I handed her over to Andrea and they're crying. I'm crying. I looked like this times 20, like awful. And it was just like the most bittersweet moment because I was so excited for them, but I was completely heartbroken for me to have to say goodbye to this baby. And we took a bunch of pictures and I just my caseworker at the time was kind of like, we kind of want to let them have their moments. Like 2002 people, we all didn't know what we were talking about. But so I remember thinking like, I want to respect their time, like their first precious moments with their baby. But also I think Andrea even said like, they also felt super bittersweet and didn't want me to leave. Like it was this really weird, almost out of body experience where like, unless you're there and you know that feeling, like it's really hard to explain to people. But we finally got to a point where I was like, okay, I'm going to go. Because I think Andrea kept trying to like hand her back to me to hold again for like one last time. And it was like this back and forth kind of thing where we all like loved each other and just hugged and cried. And then I finally got to the point where I was like, okay, I think I'm ready to go. And I walked out the door and on the hallway back to my empty like hospital room, I like collapsed into my dad's arms on the way out. And he just held me. And I just said, I can't wait to do this again with my own babies. Meaning like to be able to take mine own home and to keep them. And my parents were just like so amazing. And I just knew that it was the exact right decision that I was supposed to make, but it was also like the hardest decision ever. And just how much I loved her was super overwhelming. But ultimately, obviously I wanted what was best for her and that was what was best for her. I was really excited for her and their future. And so I gathered up all of my things, we went back to the Smith's house, and which the really crappy part about this whole story is I still have to go through postpartum. Like, my milk came in, I had no baby to feed. It was awful. I was still having all of the things that happened to a woman after, and it was just like kind of sucked. I was like, I don't even have a baby, and I have to go through all of this still. I was an emotional mess, obviously. But the Smiths were so good, and like I said, it was at the Olympics. So like they got us involved right away. We would go to the Olympic events. We would do all these things to like keep me busy. But there was still times like obviously I would break down and have a really hard time. And I think my mom stayed with me for maybe a week after, and then my dad had to go back to work, and I think my siblings probably went back with him. And I just kind of tried to start going back to kind of a normal life, but I stayed there in Utah with this family, and I worked, and I just got myself really busy trying to work and make money to go back to school eventually, and just to stay there to get counseling and go to therapy and do all the things that I needed to do right after that, which was super helpful. I really loved being there with all that support. And then I think I went back home in May of 2002 and kind of started to go on with my life. And at that time, we would mail like letters and pictures. I would see her as a baby kind of growing up. And I loved seeing all of those things because I loved seeing that she was happy and loved and taken care of. And it was all really comforting to me. And I think like around, I mean, I'm kind of leaving some details out just for the sake of time, but I got to meet her when she was 5. We were at a park, and I had had my daughter, Kennedy, already. And so we got to meet at a park, and that was really cool to be able to see her. And my mom was with us, and my mom, I remember my mom saying, like, she is exactly like you when you were 5. But at that time, we weren't saying things like, this is Heidi, your birth mom. Like, they weren't saying that. And they told me that they weren't going to. They just told me that they were going to tell her that I was her friend. And I was like, totally okay with that. I've always been very, had the end goal in mind. And I've always said this is the only thing I've ever been patient in my whole life. Like, was like the end goal of knowing her and meeting her and like having a relationship with her. And so that meant whatever boundaries they put in place, I would completely honor and respect. And so when they said, we're not going to tell her who you are. We're just going to meet you at a park, and we're going to tell her that you're our friend. I was like, okay, cool. I'll do whatever you want. And so we met. It was so fun. We spent 3 hours together. I mean, she was just the cutest little thing, and it was so fun to see her. And after that, we had decided that we would be able to see each other more often. And then during a few years after that, like I was kind of like expecting to be able to see her more, but they had stuff going on. I think Andrea shared with you that they had gone through a divorce at the time. And when she finally told me about the divorce, it was actually 3 years after their divorce is when she finally told me, because there was a span of time where we didn't have a lot of communication, not because neither one of us wanted to, but it was because I was raising my own kids, like littles at home, which was super overwhelming and exhausting, and then they were going through their life. And so there was a period of time where like maybe we wrote once a year or something through email. But then she finally told me, and I was really upset, like so devastated and upset. And like I could have kept her in my own broken home. Like, you guys were supposed to stay together and have this eternal family. And I was going through a lot of mental drama where it was like, I made a mistake. And what did you do? And then I kept having the spirit tell me, like, no, Heidi, remember what you felt in that room when you first met them. Like, they are her parents, and you could control who she went to. Like, that was the only thing you got to control out of this whole situation. But Alex still gets to have her life, and she still gets to go through hard things, and her parents still get to go through hard things. Like, you don't get to have any control over any of that. But you did what you were supposed to. You felt that, you knew it, and that's what you have to go off of. And once I was reminded of that, I was able to let it all go. And I was just like, you're right. She's exactly where she's supposed to be. And she's going to have hard times, just like I've had hard times in my life. And so the next time I got to see her, she was 13. And that was so fun and so nerve wracking for both of us. Like, kind of seeing a mini teenage version of yourself is wild. And I remember looking at her and just being like, oh my gosh, we look so much alike. Like, it was crazy. And she reminded me a lot of my little sister, that surprise baby. This is a fun fact. She came almost a year exactly after Alex was born. That's a whole other story. But so it was actually kind of fun to see Kylie grow up, because she reminded me a lot of like, oh, this is what Alex would be doing at this age. And this is kind of like how she would be acting. They reminded me a lot of each other. So that was really fun.
And they look a lot alike too.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. So we hung out when she was 13, and that was super fun because my kids were there. I don't think my kids really fully understood everything yet, but it just felt like, it just felt right to be able to be with them. And we, every year after that, we kind of tried to see each other, like when she was 14 and 15, and her mom got remarried. I think when she was 15, she might have to correct me on that, but Jared and I got,
Andrea was.
Yes. Yeah. You're right. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Alex was 15. Jared and I got to go to the wedding for that. And that was super fun just to kind of spend more time with them. That's also the first time that she got to meet our brother Tyler. And that was really cool. And I just remember thinking
about,
I know, I'm sure you weren't. Well, he lived in Provo at the time. I think that like, as she got older, I kept thinking like, oh, there's hope. Like we're going to really know each other. And someday she's going to get to know my whole family. Like I just had so much faith that that's what would happen. And I even remember like later on, like before she was 18, even like texting my family chat and being like, you guys just wait, it's going to happen. Like, I know it's going to happen someday. And I just hope and pray that it will. And I just kept having to think like, if I just keep my boundary, like our boundaries, and I'm respecting theirs, and I'm doing everything that I'm want to, like, they're going to want to know me. And so I think like before she would turn 18, or maybe it was 19, I don't remember. I had a conversation with her where I was like, listen, like you're 18 now, like we can have this as open as you want. I'm here, but also I'm respecting if you're not ready yet. And to be honest, she would tell you this, like she wasn't super ready at that time. And I was okay with it. I said, okay, that's fine. Like when you're ready, we'll be ready. And now, like, it just, the story gets so much better from there. Like, we have each other's phone numbers. She'd tell you that she was afraid that I was going to be like a crazy person and want to call her all the time and text her all the time. And I told her, I said, listen, you give me your phone number, I'm not going to send you crazy cat videos. I promise. Like, I'm going to back off. Like, you talk to me when you want to talk to me. And so I did. I just was like, everything up until that point was with her mom, like through her mom. And I just always respected that Andrea was her mom. Like I never wanted the title of being mom, because that's not who I was to Alex. Like I was her birth mom. And I just always loved and honored and respected Andrea as her mom. Like that's who she was. And I loved that. Like Andrea and I had a really close relationship. Have we had to work through things like throughout the years? Yes. Because crazy enough, like there, and Andrea would tell you this exact same thing. Like there are insecurities on both sides. Like I have my own insecurities about things and she has her own insecurities about things. But what's been amazing about our relationship is we have been able to come together and talk about it. And that has only benefited our relationship. And ultimately knowing that Alex is like the most important person in this whole story, in this whole relationship, has been the reason why I think that we are where we are today. And I love her mom for loving me the way that she does. I think when I don't know, she met mom and dad. I don't even remember how old she was. I could do the math, but I don't want to. But she met our parents. They came down for one weekend in Utah. I was with them. My brother was blessing his baby. And so we were kind of like, that's a kind of a really good opportunity for maybe Alex to meet them if she wanted it. And she finally said that she was ready. And she was really nervous. But that weekend went so well that her mom even said, hey, when are we going to have this Wyatt Arbuckle reunion? And I think my mom and dad and I have kind of looked at her like, oh, that's funny. And then like we went on with our conversation, and then Andrea like stopped. She goes, I'm about to get offended here. I'm being serious. Like, when are we going to have this reunion? And I was like, oh, she's serious, Mom. And so we planned a family reunion that weekend for all of us, all of my six siblings, plus their spouses and families, plus my mom and dad, plus Alex, her boyfriend, her siblings, her mom and stepdad, to all get together at Bear Lake and have this reunion. And it was like the greatest week of my life. I mean, it was unreal. I kept like pinching myself. Like, is this for real? That all of my siblings get to meet this human being that I created and that I've been waiting for our whole life, to like her whole life, to be able to like have this moment. And I think it was magical. And it just felt like family. And we've done it every other year since. And we have the next one coming up in the summer. After that first one, Alex came and spent a week at our home with our kids. And I mean, it was just the greatest thing. It was so fun. My kids are now at the point where they refer to her as their half sister, which is kind of cute. Like, she's getting married soon. And we were talking about if the kids were going to go with us. And Cole, my youngest, he'll be 13 next week. He goes, Mom, of course we're going. Our sister is getting married. So like, it's really sweet that like they look at her like their half sister, and it doesn't feel weird or strange. None of it. Like, it just feels like we're all family. And anyways, I don't know what else you got. That's a long story, but it's the greatest story. Like, I love it so much.
Yeah. You didn't leave us with much time. You did all the time.
No, I'm sorry.
No, I wanted to point out, and you touched on this a lot, about feeling so much guilt and sorrow and stuff in those moments, right? When you just thought you were unlovable. And for whatever reason, we do that. And we think that we're not worthy of God's love, or we're not worthy of our earthly parents' love, you know. And I don't know where that comes from.
Yeah.
I mean, society, you know, a bunch of different, because it's not like God ever makes us feel like that. And he was there the entire time for you, right? And guiding you. And so it's, I can just think back in my life in moments where I have felt God's love the most. And it's, those moments are so special and incredible, even though he's always there showing that love, you know. It's just up to me to be willing to see it and recognize it.
Yeah. I mean, if you listen to Andrea's side of the story and my side of the story, you can see it orchestrated so beautifully, where it's like, he was there the whole time because he had a plan the whole time. And like, Andrea and I will talk about how we just know that we just knew each other before this life. Like, it sounds crazy to some people, but that's the only way we can describe it. Like, our souls just knew each other. And we just know that, like, I was the way for her to become a mom. And I would not take it back for a second. Like, it was all, it all just came together beautifully. And you're right. He was with me the whole time. Even if I didn't think that it, that he was there, he was.
Yeah. And I know I want to leave some stuff for Michaela, but God didn't force you to have a baby, right? He didn't make that decision for you, but he used you. He used your decisions, and even in your mistakes, right? Or things that we perceive as mistakes or sins or whatever, he can still use all of that for good. And in that moment, he used you as an angel, right? You were an angel for somebody else, even when you're not doing the things that you're supposed to be doing, you know? And it just amazes me how he is the best at that kind of stuff, and all at the same time, and everything, like you were talking about. And he's just the best. And
yeah,
we love Andrea so much, and we have felt a special connection with her just because of the things that we've been through.
Right? Okay, stop right there. Yeah, that's
I know. That's where I'm going.
So. But real quick, I know I agree with you because I often feel it's so funny. Now I'm going to use the same word, guilt. I feel guilty saying that I felt guilty then, that I like felt shame because of what a blessing Alex is in my life. And I wouldn't want it any other way. Like, I don't ever want her to feel that she was a mistake or that she wasn't supposed to be here because she was. It was all a part of the plan. And it was the choices that I made that got her here. Like, you're right. Like, God just used me as an instrument because of the choices I was already making to have her come to this earth. And she is, like I said, the greatest blessing. She is not a mistake. She is a blessing, and she has blessed the lives of so many. And anybody that knows her knows what an amazing blessing that she is. And I don't ever want her to feel that way, even though I can't control how she has felt in the past, like kind of trying to sort through all of her feelings. But I think that she knows now, like, how much she is loved and just what a blessing she is.
Well, one thing that I had in mind is that even after 24 years or however long it's been, you're still blessing so many people because of your decision to place her, because you are our angel. And little did you know back then that your brother would have had to go through something similar, maybe on the different side of things. But in all of our adoptions, like, I always thought to myself, like, and I know that I would have had the heart for the birth mom before, but being able to think in my mind, like, this is Heidi, like, this mom, like, my sister had to go through this. And it put so much different perspective for us, you know, being the adopted parents, you know. And I've had many conversations with Andrea, and she's helped me so much, like, on that side. But we had an episode not too long ago, and she said that, I think it was, she had made little rocks and she placed them everywhere. And not like her and her kids did that. You know, they placed rocks, they painted the rocks, and they placed them, you know, somewhere because she found a rock that had a ladybug on it. And it reminded her of her child that passed. And the thought of that, like, her doing that small, simple task where the person that left that ladybug, you know, rock.
I think it was an elephant.
Or elephant, whatever. I can't remember. We've had so many different stories. But that reminded her and made her feel of her daughter that had passed, right? And those simple things that you did along the way allowed, you know, someone else to have that blessing. And we don't know what, you know, our little actions are doing, you know, along the way. Like, you might drop that rock and not think anything of it, but it was something so big to someone who found it. And yeah, I just can't thank you enough for being such an inspiration. And you are our angel. And yeah, we can't thank you enough.
I was talking about adoption with a friend of ours. This was a few months back, and he's Mexican, so this goes along with what you were saying about our family. Yeah. He was just thinking, like, you know, not really knowing much about your story or whatever, but he said that if somebody in my family got pregnant, he's like, I could not let them place that baby, you know? And I was sitting there thinking, like, I'm not judging you for thinking that, but if everybody thought that, I wouldn't have my kids, mm-hmm. you know? And Alex wouldn't be where she is. And like you said earlier, people can look at it and think that it's the easy way out, but it's not. I would say it would be almost easier to keep that child selfishly. And
yeah, it's a hard sacrifice.
You know, but what a blessing for Alex and for us. Like, adoption is just the most beautiful thing, and it is a part of God's plan, and it's it's just so beautiful. It blesses so many people. And just like anything else, there's bad adoption stories, you know, just like anything. Yep. But
I was not going to be a crazy birth mom. I'm just kidding. We love them all. We love them all because they've sacrificed.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And we, like Micaiah said, we've been able to see both sides of it, and it's such a blessing for us. But yep. Well, I told y'all it was a great story. And
I know. Sorry it was long. It's 24 week. Years.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot more you could have said too.
Well, but
I know
a little bit for Alex, right? Because Alex can say a lot of the things maybe that you might have left out.
Yeah.
But
so tune in next week and you'll hear Alex's story.
Alex, wait, can I give a piece of advice? You didn't ask me. I know it's late.
Goodness. I literally was just gonna say, but let's leave on one piece of advice.
Yes. Okay.
Because I think this is super important. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I can't make it sound like I forgot to say
something. Oh my gosh, okay. You're leaving this part in. He forgot. He's not perfect. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
Give us your...
Okay, I would love to hear some advice, please.
Okay. So if you ever find yourself in this situation where there's a young girl or an older girl who is pregnant and is trying to figure out what she wants to do, whether or not she wants to place or she wants to parent or anything, my biggest piece of advice is you have to let it be her decision. Like, she has to decide for herself, because when times get hard, and they will, she has to fall back on her own decision. She can't have anybody else to blame. She can't say, my parents made me do this and now I'm mad at them and I resent them forever because this baby's out there and I'm not raising them. And like for me, when I placed and it was my decision, when things got hard, when I found out about their divorce, I stuck with, that's a decision I made and it was the right decision. And that's what helped me get through that like little rough patch that I had. And so I give my parents so much credit for them just knowing how important it was for me to make my own decision. And they were supportive no matter what I chose. And I felt that from the beginning. Like, I don't talk enough about how amazing my parents were through this whole thing, because they were amazing. And so I always just tell people that, let it be the girl's decision. And for any girls out there who might be in the same position, you are loved and you are amazing. And whatever you decide, like, you are worth all of the love in the world. There's nothing that can take that you could do that should take people's love away from you, and especially not your Heavenly Father's love from you.
Well, and not speaking for mom and dad, but that was really hard for them. Almost as hard as it was for you, you know? And
it was their first grandbaby. Mm-hmm. Like, it was first hard for them to know that I got pregnant. And then second of all, I think it was even harder for them to even have to say goodbye to her. Like, I've told people that I don't think that I ever saw my dad cry, except for when he was there with us in the hospital with Alex. That's the first time I saw my dad cry like that.
He cried when I moved out.
Oh my gosh. Well, you moved out after I placed her. So there. Yes, huh?
Oh yeah, I was after
19.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. Heidi.
What? Sorry.
Can you share one thing that you know to be true?
Yeah, that Brent is not always right. Just kidding. Yes. No, I'm sorry. This is supposed to be the serious part. I'm sorry. Yes. I know that we have a Heavenly Father who is very aware of us and has our lives. If we allow him to, he will orchestrate our lives so beautifully that things will work together for our good, even in times that we think are really hard and really maybe bad. That he has a plan for us to make all things work and all things beautiful and all things good. And if we just turn to him and let him and start saying yes to him, like, we're only going to be able to see the amazing, like, beautiful life that he has planned for us. It's even so much better than we could ever imagine. Like, there's like this really cool picture of this little girl with a smaller teddy bear, and then Jesus or God, like, holding an even bigger teddy bear in his back. And I love that picture so much, because there's so many times in my life where I'm like, I have not been willing to give him this small teddy bear in return, because I'm holding on to whatever I think is right for me. And if I would just let go, and the times in my life that I have let go, he has only given me twice as much or better than I could have ever imagined. And it's because he loves us so much, and he makes amazing things out of really hard things.
Love it.
Amen.
Amen. Yes. Thanks, Hyde. We love you so much, and can't wait for people to listen to this. I know it's going to be one that touches so many people's hearts. So
thanks. Yep. Love you guys. Okay. And I know we're supposed to be done, but I will say, like, getting to watch you guys get Reese and Tegan, like, that was the other part of the story that I, like, it helped heal my heart too, because, like, I knew this family that I lived with and their little boys, and, like, I loved them, but getting to see you guys become parents was, like, the cherry on top of my story, where it was like, this is what it was like for them. And I love Reese and Tegan, like, if they were literally flesh and blood. Like, those kids, they are a family. They are Wyatt's. They are your kids, and I love them so much. Like, I mean, I love my other nieces and nephews, but I think because of our story, like, I just might have a little bit of a bond with them, a little bit different. And it's, well, I love all of the other ones.
But you every day.
I know, I love her. Anyways, I just had to put that little nugget in there. Like, what a blessing that is to be able to see this side of the story too. And I love your guys' birth moms. I've only met one of them, but I love them and have such a deep, deep love for them.
Thanks for joining us on Angels Among Us. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow along for more stories of everyday miracles and reminders that angels are among us. If you have a story to share, please email or DM us with a brief summary. We'd love to hear from you. And remember, when we are waiting, God is working.